Of starting, and out of respect for the folks that are here, I do want to start the meeting. We will not officially gavel in until we have quorum, but at this time, if we could have Mr. Nobles and his staff come forward from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and they can start their report, and then once we get the membership here, we'll gavel in, and we will also approve the amendments at that time. But for respect out of everybody that's listening in, we're going to start here with Mr. Nobles. Today, we're going to go over a minute and the report that the legislative auditor put together, and then we'll also be hearing from representatives from Minute as well. So, Mr. Nobles, if you could start us off, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's good to be back with you again and with members of your committee. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and again, I have with me Cecile Furkel, who is Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division. And we do appreciate this opportunity to talk about something that is very important to Minnesota state government and, frankly, to every organization, and that is our ability to effectively and cost-effectively use the power of technology. Madam Chair and members, I look around, and maybe some of you, like me, remember some of the early days of computers. And how technological changes have come and had a real impact on us in every part of our life, but especially in the operations and structure of governments. And Minnesota state government is very much like other large organizations. We've used computers in different ways and different kinds of technology as they've come along. I actually remember when I first came to work at state government, we had big mainframe computers. Big IBM machines up on the fifth floor of the Centennial Building. And if you wanted something done by a computer, you punched in some punch cards, and then you fed them into the computer, and they gave you a printout. Those are the old days. And then personal computers came along, and we could all have a desktop or a laptop, and it kind of decentralized things. And then we had in state government various departments and agencies and boards kind of going their own direction. And several years ago, legislators, particularly former House member Keith Downey, but also Phyllis Kahn, took a look at that structure and said, we could be more efficient if we consolidated. And so there was the consolidation, putting basically Minute under control of all of the hardware and the systems development and security of all of the computer systems in the executive branch.
And Mr. Nobles, I'm going to pause you right there, and we're going to get ourselves gaveled in so we're official. So we're starting the official meeting of State Government Finance. Members, in your packet are the minutes from January 15th. Hopefully you've all had a chance to read through them. I am assuming Representative Petersburg, do you want to make a motion?
So moved.
Okay, so Representative Petersburg moves to approve the minutes from January 15th. Are there any questions? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes from January 15th, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes for January 15th for State Government Finance are approved. And with that, Mr. Nobles, if you could proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the changes in technology have had an impact, significant impact, on both the operations and the structure of state government. And as I was mentioning, several years ago, the legislature thought that the better approach to the structure in state government would be a consolidation. And that is a big thing to happen. It was not easy. It took a lot of changes in relationships, in who was in charge of what. And some of that is still occurring. And in our audit work, those questions have also had some impact. As we've gone around and done audits of IT systems, as the consolidation was going on, there was some confusion, frankly, among agencies, Minute, MMB, other people about who was really setting the rules, who was in charge. Some of you were at the Ways and Means Committee yesterday where this whole issue kind of came into play with DHS, the Department of Human Services, and its ability to do eligibility determinations for public programs. And we now have a state-based insurance exchange called MinSure, which kind of took over some of that initial functioning of people applying through MinSure for their coverage either by a commercial plan or by a public plan. So we have DHS now dependent, as we said, on Minsure for that processing, for the software. But then we also have Minute involved in the development of the software, but also owning the underlying hardware. So we now have a fairly complex arrangement in state government where to establish software, to have the hardware, to do the functions, it's not just one agency that's involved. It's often several. And so as we've gone around and done audits of IT systems as a part of this consolidation, we've had to try to deal with some of this confusion. And at this point, Madam Chair, I'd like to have Cecile Ferkel talk about how that has impacted our work.
Ms. Ferkel, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and state your name for the record, please.
Good morning. I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor. And as Mr. Nobles was saying, since the consolidation, the division of responsibility between the agencies and Minute has been something that has continued to be a work in progress. I think that that has created some frustration on the part of agencies, some confusion, certainly some challenges. When we go into an agency and we're looking at their IT security, we tell the agency, you are responsible for the security over your data, over your systems. And sometimes, though, we hear back, well, we no longer have the knowledge and skills to make those, to understand those risks and make those assessments because all of our IT people are now Minute people. And on the flip side, when we talk with Minute, Minute will sometimes, you know, Minute needs to work with the agencies to provide those services, to provide that security. But sometimes what we hear from Minute is we're just the service provider. We can't assess their environment. We can't overstep their determinations of what their risks are and what security they need. So when we look at it more from a state government perspective, we feel they need to work this out between the agency and between Minute so that there are no gaps in security over the data that state government has. A recent audit that we did, we went to the exit conference where we talked with the agency about the report, and it was an audit that was focused at a particular agency, but there was no one in the room from that agency. There were only the Minute people, either Minute people that work centrally here or Minute people that worked within the department. So we delayed the meeting until someone from the department was able to be there to hear our recommendations about security changes that they needed to make for their data. So that's kind of the interesting environment that we've looked at through the last couple of years, and we always feel like we're dancing a little bit between what the agencies are responsible for and what Minute is responsible for. We're not trying to make that decision ourselves, but we're trying to make sure that state government data is protected. So this audit, though, what we looked at, it was focused on Minute, and what we were looking at here was a part of Minute services that they provide throughout state government, and these services are shared by state government. For example, email services. All state agencies use the same email system, and that's something that Minute provides centrally and then bills to state agencies. Another example of that, and these are the two examples that we use in the report, is mainframe services. Minute maintains, although Mr. Nobles referred to those as antiquated, and perhaps they are antiquated, they are still in use throughout state government, and especially in some of our bigger programs. Mainframe is fundamental to the operations of those programs. So mainframe services, again, is something that Minute operates and maintains and then bills state agencies for. The focus of the report was on those shared services that they bill out. And for a minute, that's about 20% of their services that they provide. It results in a billing to state agencies of almost $94 million, $93.7 million a year. So it's still a substantial chunk of money, not perhaps their primary services that they provide, but a substantial amount of their funds. So the objective of our audit was to see whether or not the process that Minute uses to develop its billings, its billing rates, and also to bill state agencies, whether or not that process complied with federal regulations, with state statutes, with state policies. And if you look on page 5 of the report, our conclusion is that they did not comply with federal regulations and did not comply with state statutes and policies. In developing the billing rates that they used to charge state agencies for these shared services. So if I can explain a little further, the fundamental thing that does not comply is that the billing rates are not developed based on the cost of the services. The federal government, when they provide money to the state of Minnesota, they say, yes, we understand you're going to have some administrative costs or some overhead or indirect costs that's going to be necessary to operate a program for the federal government, and we're okay with you billing us for the cost of those services. So the federal government has a requirement that the billings for these central services, these shared services, be based on the cost that's related to the program that's being run. The state government also says that when the state operates a internal service fund in order to provide a central service like these shared IT services, that the rates for those services also be developed on a break-even level. So going into this, our expectation was that the rates would be break-even, that the rates would be based on cost. And what we found was that some of the rates are set substantially higher than break-even or higher than the cost of providing that service, and some of the rates are set lower than the cost. And Minute, by design, has these costs to offset each other so that overall, within their fund, within their operations, these costs offset and they operate on a break-even level. That's not, though, what the expectation of the federal government is, and it's also not what we think the expectation of the statute is. We believe that those costs need to be on a cost basis for the each service that's provided. So one of the ones that we looked at was mainframe services, and that's one where Minute sets that rate substantially higher, 56% higher than break-even. And mainframe services is a service that's predominantly used by the Department of Human Services to run its medical assistance program. It's also predominantly used by the Department of Employment and Economic Development to run its unemployment system. These are two big federal programs where the federal government is paying substantially more for these services than the cost of providing those services. When we do our audit work on the behalf of federal government, this is one of the things that we test. We were able in this audit to go deeper than we had in our regular annual audits, and we found that those rates were not set appropriately. To offset that, the underbillings occur in email services, which are costs that are shared throughout state government. And I know that part of what Minute has asserted to us is that these smaller state agencies, where pretty much the only service they obtain from Minute is email services, they don't have the budget to be able to adjust to the actual cost of email services. And so it would be a real substantial hit to them if email services and other Office, you know, Word, Excel, other Microsoft Office-type products were set at cost, that these budgets would take a real hit. So their focus is more overall. Our focus is down at the program level. What are the costs that are being paid by DHS, or more specifically, by any program that has dedicated money? The costs that are being paid for these services need to be related to the service that's provided. One of the interesting aspects of this audit was that the Department of Management and Budget was already on board with this concern, and they already were working with Minute to move Minute more toward a break-even rate on these services. So much of the finding actually is the correspondence that's going back and forth between the Department of Management and Budget and Minute in trying to make sure that federal regulations and state statutes are followed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ferkel. Thank you, Mr. Nobles. What we're going to do at this point, we're going to have anybody that has questions for Mr. Nobles and Ms. Ferkel will go over those. And then Minute is here, too, and we want to have them have an opportunity as well. And Sheldon, I understand, our Representative Johnson, I understand you have a question. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I read through the report, and one question I have, I see that you say on page 8 that Minute's response concerned you, you know, particularly the overbilling of federal government and then using that money to leverage more state funds. Is there response then on in the letter in the back of the packet you gave us dated January 16th? Is that a satisfactory response to the concerns you raised?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think overall the substance of the response is satisfactory. I personally was a little surprised when I saw that the anticipated resolution date being over the next four rate setting and approval cycles. That's 4 years. That's four more years of continued overbilling for services and four more years of not complying with the federal regs and not complying with the state statutes of how those rates need to be set. You know, I understand there may be extenuating circumstances that would make it impossible or inconvenient or inappropriate to resolve it immediately, but 4 years to me seemed like a long time.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What would you recommend then,
Ms. Ferk,
based on your experience?
Madam Chair and Representative, this is something they've already been working on and yet not making really substantial progress. When we had our exit conference with them, they did not provide us with a timeline. When we said, well, how long is it going to take? They said, well, over some period of time, but would not commit to a period of time. 4 years at least is an improvement in that discussion, but it seems to me that a couple of years, you know, would be part of what they have asserted is that they need to get the small agencies need to get the budgetary changes in place to be able to have sufficient resources to pay for their share of these underbilled services. This being a budget year, perhaps this could be the year that those resources are provided or those adjustments in the budgets are made. So I would think that a year or two would be more in line with what I think.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, sounds like a good question for a minute when they come forward too. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Madam Chairman and audit guys, is there any law suggestions or specific appropriation? That was kind of the thrust of what my question. Is there anything for the legislature to do in this session now that in the direction we should go? Is there anything we should do in terms of law changes or... you know, and is there any further oversight that you guys need to do?
Mr. Nobles, Ms. Ferkel?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, I think, as Ms. Ferkel said, probably the most important thing for the legislature to do is on the issue of budgets and, you know, realizing that Minute needs to do some cost accounting and notify agencies, particularly some of the smaller agencies, as to what they should be paying for certain services so that those services are not subsidized by other agencies or other funds, and then have that worked out in the budget process. But it seems to me, as Ms. Ferkel said, our standard in making our judgments was not only federal requirements but what you, the legislature, put in the law. So, I mean, if you would certainly have the prerogative, I assume, to change that law, but your statement in the law as of now is that you expect Minute to operate on a break-even basis.
Representative Kahn?
Well, that was kind of going to be the thrust of my, Madam Chairman, of my next question, which was, is it more sense instead of doing the budgetary adjustments to the agencies to give Minute a better budget, make them more responsible for both the financial and the operational? I think we've gone back, you know, over the time I've been here and you've been here, I think we've gone back and forth over how we've done this for all kinds of things in the legislature. And would it make more sense to give them the power not only to do things but also the power of the purse overdoing it so that we don't trap particularly the smaller agencies in this?
Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, and members, you know, the small agencies, and some of them are very small. I mean, we're talking about some boards and commissions that are three people, four people, eight people, and they're very small, and they always present a bit of a problem in terms of their budgets to pay for a variety of services that they need to purchase, often within state government. It's relevant. It's a little bit off, but we're doing some evaluation work, for example, at the Board of Nursing, which has a very important responsibility. And in order to fulfill some of that responsibility, they have to pay for services from the Attorney General, from the Office of Administrative Hearings. And sometimes their budget consideration of paying for those services actually has an impact on the substantive operation and fulfilling of their responsibilities. You know, this is the perfect committee to figure all of that out? I mean, how do you want to try and fund some of these smaller organizations? I think there's obviously a rationale behind what you do, and that is you require agencies to budget according to the services they buy, and then require them to pay for those. It gets to be complicated. It gets to be a challenge. If you want to change that, I think that's a significant policy change in direction. It would potentially require greater appropriation to MNIT, to the Attorney General's Office, to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So you're talking about it in the context of computer services, but there are bigger implications as well.
Representative Kahn.
I mean, that's kind of a thrust I was getting at. Would it make sense not to totally have them do everything, but to decide to kind of look over it and decide that there's a size of agency where it makes, where they ought to just be able to go to a central pool instead of have to, you know, figure it all out themselves?
Madam Chair, I can only say I think there are going to be arguments on both sides of that question, whether or not you require individual.
The argument on the other side?
That they have to be cost conscious.
Oh.
That they have to consider, I will say, for example, I use the Office of Legislative Auditor. As I mentioned this committee when I was here earlier, we pay rent. We don't have any excess square footage. We're not going to pay in our budget for space that we don't use. And frankly, back when we had some budget cuts and we had to lay off staff, we gave away significant amounts of square footage that is currently occupied by another department because we're not going to pay out of our budget for space we don't use. So I think the rationale in making agencies pay for what they use is it makes them more cost conscious.
Well, we have other members
I know,
that have
sorry.
Questions,
okay.
If we could.
I just was following up on this. But.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to
okay.
it. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Nobles. And I guess my question is similar to the line that Representative Kahn is I guess the bottom line is I'm looking at this report and hearing that we're charging more, maybe wrongly, to the federal government, and which means that's subsidizing the costs of what the state pays for. If we get this all balanced out the way you're saying we should, then we're going to have to, not just a MNIT, but to all the agencies that buy for MNIT, going to cost them more for their email services and all that stuff. And so we're going to end up having to put more in our budget to fund all these various agencies to make up for the money we're not getting from the federal government. Am I reading that right, or am I, I guess that's my question.
Mr. Nobles.
Well, let me just answer
that
briefly.
I think what he said earlier, I mean, it's kind of a choice. It's either you do the cost savings or you dedicate more tax dollars to it. So if Mr. Nobles, you want to go forward.
I want to just briefly answer it and then have Ms. Ferkel also comment. The money actually has to come through a state agency. I mean, we don't just go into the federal funds and pull this money out. So it actually is money that has to be appropriated and carried, for example, in DHS's budget or DEED's budget or somebody's budget. But there's more implications to this than that. So, Ms. Merkel.
Ms. Merkel.
Madam Chair, one aspect of the finding that I didn't mention was that part of what MNIT does, because the federal government does put limits on how much money you can accumulate, MNIT does make refunds to the federal government that perhaps makes the federal government good. It's more of a, we'll borrow the money from you now by overbilling you, and then in a year or 2 years we'll pay it back to you in a refund. But our focus also is in many of these programs, like medical assistance, there's a share that's a state share. And so if the initial cost is split 50-50 and the federal government is overcharged and they're made good, what happens to the overcharge that's paid for with state dollars in the medical assistance program or in other dedicated funds? So it's a little unclear whether or not there's a net amount that would go back to the feds that's even beyond what's already refunded to them. But there is still the question of when appropriations are made for medical assistance or for K-12 education, shouldn't the costs of IT that are charged to those programs be the cost of the services that they use and not an amount that is inflated above the break-even rate?
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Either for Mr. Nobles or Ms. Frickle, you say on page 7 of your report that Minute Management asserted that they were reluctant to increase the below break-even rates. They eventually got to the 56% overcharge. My question is, if they were reluctant, it eventually had to come down to a decision made by a person or persons. Did you uncover who those persons were that authorized the overspending in the course of your audit?
Ms. Frickle.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that this is a practice that has been going on for some time, so perhaps there was someone initially that authorized it, but we saw it most directly, and I think that we referenced to a memo from Carolyn Parnell, the commissioner and CIO at that time, asserting that this was appropriate and an appropriate strategy to use.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. And in your opinion, does that follow acceptable government accounting guidelines?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think not only from not following accounting guidelines for internal service funds, but also certainly not complying. That's the focus of this finding, not complying with the expectations of the federal government and their requirements for these types of services.
Representative Nash.
One other question, if I could. On page 4, you talked about Minute utilized funding for health care for Minnesotans. Was there a Minute component in the, I would say, less than spectacular rollout of MinSure from a technological perspective? Was that a part of this?
Ms. Frickle or Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair, I will give the answer you heard me give yesterday, and that is we are currently doing a comprehensive evaluation of the development of MinSure. We'll be issuing that report in mid-February, and it will address the involvement of Minute in the development of MinSure. It is an issue, but we will talk about that in that report. And I know this is an issue that is of great interest and concern to Representative Kahn as well.
Okay. And Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Frickle, several minutes ago you referenced mainframe services and how they would be impacted upon the medical assistance program. Given that there's federal conformity and regulations regarding that and the overpayment, underpayment, and I believe that there's also already an investigation into the usage of those dollars at the state level by the federal agencies. Is it concerning to you the implications that that would mean for not only Minute, but also you reference MMB that provisionally approved the rates that were proposed for fiscal 2014? I'm just wondering if we're maybe taking kind of a fairly open-eyed look at what would seem to be a complicit nature to a couple of agencies. I'm wondering if you can speak to that in terms of a culture that we're uncovering here. What's going on here? It seems like we've got a lot of dollars that really are not being accounted for appropriately, and it concerns me that it involves federal grant programs, federal agency programs. I know Mr. Nobles is hesitant to answer these questions given the nature of his report that's coming up in 2 to 3 weeks. But to the extent that it concerns you about a further investigation of a impropriety, I think this committee would be very, very concerned and also want a hearing of that.
Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I think what I would say in answer to that question, and I don't mean to be flippant about it, and that is why this is why you have the Office of the Legislative Auditor, to look into these things on behalf of the legislative branch. This is why we have Trust But Verify. This is why we have accountability. This is why we have legislative oversight. So whatever the federal government does in this regard, we certainly will continue to the best of our ability, look into these kinds of issues and report them to you. And if we find impropriety, we will report that to you. That's our obligation under the law. We'll do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Frickle.
One other thing, Representative, that we found, too, when we talked with the Department of Management and Budget, was that they were somewhat frustrated in their ability to make changes happen. At least as they talked with us, this is what they were saying, that they felt that the rates that were being proposed were lower than the rates that were in place, and if they didn't approve the new rates, the old rates would stay in place. So a provisional approval with some oversight and expectations was still a step ahead towards moving Minute towards a break-even point, but they felt that, you know, if they did not approve the rates, the old rates would stay in place, and that was a worse situation. So they did feel, although it is a statutory requirement that they review and approve these rates, they felt that they had no real power or authority to force any action at Minute in terms of moving these rates ahead more aggressively.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, then, Ms. Frickel, who does Minute report to with regard to these rates? You've mentioned two agencies now that speak directly to rate setting. But ultimately, who are they obligated to report their work to? And how are they accountable to the legislative body?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, the commissioners... both Minute and the Department of Management and Budget are appointed by the governor.
Representative Albright, any follow-up?
No, I think that says it all.
Okay. Members, we have Representative Kahn is last on my list, and then what we're going to do is we're going to hear from Minute. Representative Kahn?
Okay. I thought it might be helpful for a little history of Minute. First of all, the creation of Minute and giving it all the authority, the part of the statute I urge you all to look at is called 16E. And whenever you see a bill that comes in with exemptions for 16E, be wary of it. And be. I try to watch out for all of them, but, you know, I might miss them once in a time. If you want to get an idea of the range of support of Minute, it was a Downey-Kahn bill. And the year before, when the Democrats were in control, it was a Kahn-Downey bill. And it was Governor Dayton at one point, when he was reporting about something, he said the greatest thing he ever saw was the hugging of Kahn and Downey after that took place. Well, that's just the side. But...
Yes.
Anyway, what happened, the Minture bill came in, was in Mike Nelson's GovOps committee, was its first stop, and there was, in the bill as written, there was a total exemption of Minture from any parts of 16E. And, you know, I backed up my very able chair, said this bill's not moving out of the committee unless we remove that. So we did remove it. It's a good lesson. I know there aren't a lot of freshmen here, but good lesson to freshman legislators. I watched it every single step of the way, expecting it to be restored at any minute. It was restored, but in the last hour of the and it wasn't totally restored, but a partial exemption was put in of Minture for some of the criteria of Minute. I believe that that's had a lot of the problems with the technology problems with Minture. And I understand at one private meeting, somebody asked, why would we take the most important, complicated technological thing we're doing out of the experts of the technology, out of the experts of the technology people? And people kind of waved their hands and said that they didn't know. There's a bill, House File 18, that was, so I think it was the last bill that I put in at the end of the last session and the first bill I put in this session that gets rid of that specific exemption in state law. And Greg Davids, I know, is a co-author on that bill. So that's House File 18 if anyone's interested in getting on it. Dopey issue. A dopey issue like this. But, you know, and one of the things, and in fact we did, thanks to the creative you know, the House last year, the DFL leadership of the House didn't want anything hitting the floor with the words Minshew or part of it in it, with the creative drafting of our wonderful staff, Mark Shepard. We were able to write a bill that we think kind of did it without mentioning the words, and the House passed it with very strong bipartisan support. And but by the time it got to the Senate, somebody realized that it dealt with Minshew, and the governor and the Senate just totally stopped it. So that, but I do understand from talking to the Minute people that the new directorship of, there were tremendous conflicts over this issue about what was happening. I understand that the new directorship of Minshew has been much less likely to take their legislative prerogative that they had to totally ignore Minute for these things and do that. But, you know, so, but I still want to fix it. I still want to fix the law and put them totally under it. And let me just say one good thing about Minute. There was a the kind of press release that totally gets ignored, but this coordination of information systems has saved the state, I think, $127 million over the 3 years it's been in effect. So you can thank former Representative Downey for that. So, okay.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. With that, I think it would be important to have Minute come down. We have a couple of folks from Minute here today. If you could, you heard some of the questions that the members have concerns with. If you could address that, as well as kind of your overall plan to address what has been outlined in the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. And with that, please introduce yourself for the record and what your title is, and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Eichten. I am Legislative Director for the Office of Minute Services. You know, I have a response, initial response here to the audit. I also think that the committee might benefit from a little bit of grounding and overview of how Minute is funded, how Minute operates. I don't know if you have a preference on how you'd like me to proceed.
I understand. Hopefully every member has this in their packet. So
yeah.
Yes. So, members, if you want to follow along with that.
Madam Chair.
And
Madam Chair.
Representative Lane.
I would like a copy.
Oh, you don't have one in your packet? Okay. Well, we'll have a page come over and get that to you, Representative Lane. And then, Mr. Eichten, is it going to be you that's presenting this, or?
Yes.
I have, is it Chris Boozy?
Yes, I have with me Chris Boozy, Assistant Commissioner, as well as projects and initiatives, but I was going to step through the overview very quickly.
That sounds great, thanks. And thank you, Mr. Eichten. If you could proceed, please.
Absolutely. So I'll start actually on page two here with slide three, Minute Services, who we are. We provide the full spectrum of IT services for all executive branch boards and agencies. We also provide a sub-portion of services to Minnesota cities, counties, things like network connectivity. We operate MNET, the state's network. Our role pertains to leadership and direction in partnership with our agency business leaders, setting in standards, oversight, and things like project management, application lifecycle, systems operations, security management. We do daily vulnerability scans on executive branch systems, as well as IT project portfolio management. And you'll see a graphic there on the left that sort of shows the stack at the top, business applications that run government, things like the unemployment insurance system, SWIFT, work productivity tools like phone and email, and then down the stack we get into some more wonky IT things like middleware networks, hardware, and then the state's data center, which is the foundation of our IT operations. In 2011, the legislature did consolidate all things IT into what was then the Office of Enterprise Technology, now known as Minute Services. To be clear, what was out of the scope of that consolidation was the judicial branch, the courts, as well as the legislature, and then a few entities that were called out in the statute as exempt, things, the campaign finance, public disclosure board, the lottery, and a few others. The transfer of authority for people was mandated by October 1st of 2011. No dollars allocated to the effort. There was a legislative expectations in terms of efficiencies. But no goals put into the law in terms of management changes, outcomes, staff reductions. There's a requirement to manage all IT through comprehensive service level agreements. We now have 70 of those agreements in place with all agencies, boards, commissions, some down to just a few staff members, but we're able to meet that goal and actually won some national awards for it. It's really, I would say, a groundbreaking initiative to fully consolidate all IT in a single state. So moving on to the next page, information technology today. We're now Minute Services. We have roughly 2,100 employees. They live in roughly 22 agency-based offices, but some serve more than one agency. Over 2,000 distinct applications, and for the current biennium, an operating budget of $451 million.
Mr. Eichten, I'm going to pause you there a second. We were just having a little mini conversation up here. You get that primarily through the fees that you charge out. What was the number that you had in the 2011-2012 cycle for your overall annual operating budget, and then even the biennium prior to that? Do you have those numbers by
chance? I believe it was roughly $100 million in chargeback pre-consolidation, if I understand your question correctly, Madam Chair.
Yeah, that's exactly what it So pre-consolidation was $100 million. And now, post-consolidation, you're at 451.
Exactly. Okay, roughly. And that $100 million reflected IT infrastructure services, things like network, email, mainframe, hosting, but it didn't include things like application development that came in under consolidation.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You have a question for that?
Well, it's kind of a comment on it. You know, again, when Keith and I were working on the bill, the reason it was done in 2011 session was I went to Keith and I said, this is our only chance. All the commissioners are new and they don't understand what a huge turf issue it is, and all the committee chairs are new and they don't understand what a huge turf issue is, so we can actually do it this year. And I was right.
And Representative Nelson, to this point?
I'll wait until after he's done.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Eichten, if you could go on, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So agencies are charged for the IT services they consume. You'll see the graphic on the left shows there's a mix of federal, state, special revenue dollars that are appropriated to an agency, and then through the mechanism of the service level agreement, Minute provides those services either in-house or through agreements with private entities and charges that back to the agencies. Again, only roughly 1% of our funding is directly appropriated through the general fund that comes through this committee, of course. And all IT purchasing for the state now is now managed through Minute Services. The savings figure that Representative Kahn mentioned largely comes from IT purchasing streamlining activities, though I'll mention it's actually $27 million in a previous release, and I believe we're up to roughly $50 million now. It's not savings in terms of savings against budgeted dollars. It is cost avoidance that's going to be realized over the state for the state over years to come, frankly, in terms of contracts with Minute for the state as a whole, in terms of individual contracts with state agencies. We were able to gain some savings and avoidance by streamlining that purchasing. So moving on to service optimization, Minute is in the midst of implementation of a tactical plan. The tactical plan I can share with the committee members outlined some enterprise-wide goals in the form of milestones. They may fluctuate, but there's essentially no opt-out. All state agencies are included in the tactical plan efforts. It's an aggressive plan, requires some shifting of priorities and, frankly, resources to get it done, to truly design the future state of IT service and IT service delivery for the executive branch. I'll kind of cruise through the next slide, Minute Tactical Plan. There's an image there that shows what we are calling the Minute Cloud, which is the new set of centrally delivered services. You'll see the user level on the top there, supported by IT infrastructures, elements with the immediate priorities level, and then operational support underneath that and supporting it, things like HR, leadership and oversight project, and portfolio management. But the primary goal here is to make the infrastructure of state IT super efficient so that we can direct our people our money, our resources on the services that most directly add value and make a difference for our agency customers and citizens of the state. I'll probably pass through the next graphic. It's a helpful one in showing that not all services are going to become centralized services. There's a big difference between operating the transportation system in the state and operating prisons and operating healthcare programs. But combined, you'll see a set of an enhanced set of centrally delivered services and then a remaining set of agency-based services. So last slide here, who benefits our agency customers, our stakeholders, a single view into IT for the state, a single view into the IT project portfolio, better, safer systems and applications, increased government productivity, and essentially a new structure of accountability as it relates to IT, a single place for you, the legislature, to go to get answers. And then there's been in previous committees a discussion about the IT projects that have been funded by this committee. We have established an IT projects and initiative program to oversee the state's portfolio. Assistant Commissioner Ullman manages that portfolio. We implemented common project management tools and methodologies, ensured proper risk assessment and oversight and reporting on all IT projects. Now, when I say IT projects, there are very few that are IT, purely IT, things like data center consolidation. Most projects are projects, business projects, with significant IT components, but for the purposes of clarity of speech here, we'll just refer to them as IT projects. So the last slide, the FY14-15 IT project portfolio, these are projects that were called out in the budget bills in the 2013 session as having significant IT components, and you'll see the four that were funded by this committee through the Department of Veterans Affairs and MMB at bottom. So I'll move on if you'd like just to a general response to the audit findings, Madam Chair.
That would be helpful, Mr. Eichten. And then after that, we'll have questions, okay?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, while minute...
Madam Chair, are you going to come back to his layout here?
Yes, we will.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, while minutes rate package as a whole does break even, as the auditors mentioned, we do agree with the auditors' findings and recognize there's been over-recovery on individual product lines and that over-recovery has exceeded federal guidelines, particularly on certain legacy services such as mainframe service. We've remedied any overpayment through reimbursement to the federal government in an annual true-up process. We've also worked consistently over many years. The latest numbers I was looking at showed every year since 2009 to reduce those mainframe rates in accordance with the efficiencies that we've been able to gain in service delivery around mainframe. The focus has been put on ensuring that minutes rate package as a whole breaks even, that the costs are manageable for our agencies, which the package does break even. And when individual product lines have over-recovered, we've worked with our federal and our agency partners through that true-up process to provide rebates on individual over-recovering service lines. In addition to providing rebates, we've consistently reduced the rates charged to agencies every year, and we've done this gradually to mitigate the impact to agency budgets of our efforts to achieve balance in the overall rate package and normalize costs. For this reason, you know, reductions in over-recovering lines, again, have been made gradually. We want to ensure that the costs that are experienced by agencies as closely as possible mirror the budgeted costs that they have in place. It's important to know that Minute gleans no benefits from over-recovering product lines. That true-up process ensures that refunds are provided to the federal government. And ultimately, this audit, I believe, reflects the complexity involved in normalizing IT costs across agencies that over the years have dedicated varying amounts of resources to IT. But based on the auditor's recommendations, we will be working aggressively to bring these individual rates further in balance. with very significant adjustments in the spring 2015 rate package and subsequent adjustments in future rate packages. I do want to reference or call out that the auditor's comments, Ms. Ferkel's comments particularly, about the four-year timeline. I don't think that, I know that does not encapsulate our intent in addressing these audit findings. We intend to move aggressively in the first rate package, and there will be subsequent adjustments, we assume, in future rate packages within that four-year timeline. I know we're in the process of correcting the record, frankly, on that letter to the auditors and as well as to MMB to make clear our intent to move aggressively in this first rate package to address the over-recovering product line. There will be an impact to agency budgets. I think the committee has sort of brought this out already in its discussion, but we take the auditor's findings very seriously. We appreciate the work that they've done, and based on those recommendations, we're going to be moving aggressively in the next rate package and in years to come. So happy to answer any additional questions.
Mr. Eichten, I just have a question about the true-up timeline. So how much time are we talking about, the time that you make the overcharge and then the time that you actually pay back? When is that rebate portion for the feds? And then also, are you saying that you also rebate to agencies that you overcharge as well?
I know, Madam Chair, I know there have been rebates to agencies as well. In terms of rate, there have been rate reductions in mainframe as well as rebates. On the timeline of payback to the federal government, I would defer to Assistant Commissioner Boozy here. I don't know if, I believe it's within a year to 2 years, but I'm not exactly clear on that.
Mr. Oman?
Mr. Boozy.
Or Boozy, excuse me.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Boozy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner and Chief Security Officer with Minute Services. And Mr. Eichten was generally correct. The process generally is a year to two after all of the fiscal activities are accounted for in the financial records. But the federal government has various methods that they provide in federal cost accounting regulations to reimburse any excess revenue that comes in on any individual product line, and we follow those processes.
And Mr. Boosie, what about for the agencies with the state funds? What is the timeline for offering rebates in that area?
Madam Chair, committee members, there are not processes for state funds for doing any type of true-up and rebate.
Okay, so Commissioner, we could be potentially looking at a biennium to biennium, or are you saying there's no rebates that are done on that level at all?
Madam Chair, committee members, there are no rebates for state programs.
Great. Okay. We've got a list of members here. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think you touched a little bit on this, but I guess this is a fairly young agency. You know, 2011, it came into effect. You say you're using rates from 2009. How did you come about originally setting these rates? I mean, did you get those from, this is what the agency said they were, it cost them, and you can put those all in a pool, and you're finding out, okay, they were wrong here, they were wrong here, and balanced, and maybe we balanced out to break even, but we're overcharging here and we're undercharging here. I guess, how did you originally set those rates? And it sounds like you're trying to get them all to the mean where they're break even. But I guess, you know, I guess the basic is, how did you set those rates? And going forward, I understand from what you've said, your intent is to keep them all at the break even rate. And I guess that's my first question.
Mr. Eichten or Mr. Boosie?
Madam Chair, committee members, many of the rates that are in place today predate Minute Services as an agency. They're historical. So, for example, prior to Minute, the Office of Enterprise Technology provided mainframe services to customers. This is going back before my time, but those rates were, I believe, initially set up to recover costs on a break-even basis over time. What's happened with many of the legacy rates, though, is that there's been efficiencies gleaned in the delivery of IT services.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that it's these efficiencies that have been gleaned that have been are part of why the overcharging is coming about. Okay, I understand that. The other question I had, and this was, I wanted to do a follow-up when the auditor was up there, but This is something I've been hearing from some outstate agencies and small outstate agencies about. It's cheaper for them to buy their, say, their email services locally, say in Duluth or say in Thief River Falls, than to they're charged by minute rate currently. And we were being told that the minute services are actually undercharging for that rate and need to raise that rate, so in effect they're going to be hitting these agencies harder when they say they can get their email services or some of these IT services done locally instead of through a minute, and that would save the state money. I guess, what is your response to that?
Mr. Boozy?
Madam Chair, committee members, Minute provides cost-effective IT services in a variety of different categories. It's difficult to respond to a question like that without knowing the particular situation. But I think when you look at this at a broader level, where we came from as a state organization, we're at a point today where we are creating enterprise-wide services under the IT consolidation law that the legislature enacted through the bipartisan legislation. And we're doing some pretty remarkable things. And if you use email as an example, we went from an environment where we probably had 70 to 80 individual IT environments that had servers and patching and people and process and tools. And we moved that environment down into one technology service that is managed through one team, which is leveraging a very cost-effective cloud provider. So it's, we will have to look at the individual circumstance with that particular customer. But as a whole, when you look at what's being done with IT consolidation, bringing all these organizations into one effective IT organization, it's hard to fathom that the state as a whole could be more costly with one cost-effective solution than running 80 individual solutions. When we typically look into these situations, we find that people really don't do detailed cost accounting that encompasses the people, the processes, the servers, the patching, all the costs that really come into play with running and managing IT.
Thank you.
We've got Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up to that then, some of the agencies in Greater Minnesota that are smaller that can get less expensive services through local vendors, are you open then to possible solutions to that issue? Can you see a way that can be resolved short of the current situation?
And I'm just curious, is part of the reason that you have it all under one is then there's compatibility with technology too. Can you speak to that and what that means, if you can help us out a little bit? And I don't know if it's Mr. Agton or Ms. Boosie. Mr. Boosie.
Madam Chair, committee members, which question did you want answered first?
Well, he has dibs, so we'll give it to Representative Johnson.
Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I would say in general, we're open to any proposal that comes from an agency as far as where they can obtain more efficient IT service. In particular, I think I'm hearing echoes of concerns that have been expressed by the IRRRB. And to make clear, they sought exemption and achieved exemption from all of 16E two sessions ago. So they're now able to honor their local sourcing commitment to the fullest extent possible. But I would just point out that I think the chair's comments are correct, that beyond cost reductions, there are things to look at in terms of the ease of collaboration across agencies from the use of a single email system and a single collaboration platform, such as I'm sure others have used SharePoint, services that will allow things like Microsoft Link that allow online meetings, the sharing of documents, the sharing of desktops, the sharing of collaborative workspaces and shared document storage systems. And I think there's a quantifiable value there to having a single approach to IT that all state agencies use that gets beyond simply the dollar amount that's charged. We would argue that what we provide in terms of an effective email solution, for instance, we've pushed our vendors pretty hard to get very competitive pricing for what is an industry standard email tool. and that allows government to truly operate in a 21st century manner.
Madam Chair, committee members, beyond the quantitative aspects that Mr. Eichten referred to, I think it's also important to take into consideration the qualitative aspects of delivering IT. And one of my roles in the state of Minnesota is to get our state in a better posture from a security perspective as well. And when you think about the delivery of IT services and the former model that we had where there were, you know, 78 organizations out there trying to run IT on their own with very thin staffs, this is the value proposition of moving towards enterprise services. There's simply not enough money to throw at that model to address the kinds of security challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis. And that's where I talk about the quality of services as well. The kinds of things that are now unfolding as we move through IT consolidation is trying to build holistic environments that we, in fact, can protect better than we've done in the past. In today's environment, for example, we need to have continuous vulnerability scanning of all of our IT assets to find and fix problems before they're exploited by hackers. We need individuals with sophisticated monitoring tools to identify hacking attempts that are going on, that needle in the haystack. These are the kind of things that get built into a holistic environment that are the qualitative aspects. And those are the things that are built into the model that we're doing today. So those are some of the reasons why you potentially could do IT cheaper if you take those kind of characteristics off the table. But for Minnesota as a whole and for the state government, we really believe that we need to build those security services into all of the new consolidated technologies that we run by default, and that's one of the things we're doing today.
Okay, and we have Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers as well. I certainly do appreciate the challenge that you've had over the last few years to try to bring that many organizations and IT programs into one. IT stands for information technology, and information is the one area where we are still seem to be vulnerable, and when they were standalone and one got hacked, it only impacted that one. Now that we combined them, there is certainly a greater increase of that potential, and so I can understand that piece of it. The part that I really want to bring us back to, and the concern that the legislative auditor had, has to do with how the budgets are determined and the costs are figured for the particular activities that are used. And I think I heard a quote from Mr. Eichten earlier on the philosophy, which was to make sure costs mirror the budgeted amounts, which is, I think, backwards from the way we really would like. In other words, we would like actually the budgets to mirror the actual costs of the activities. And so I think that's a little bit of a change. I understand the political nature of why that was developed for that, but in reality, we're talking here about transfers within agencies. It's not going to make a difference in the budget for the state. It is just going to make a difference in how we budget for any particular agency and what the costs are. And when we have shady areas where we're unclear about the costs, it doesn't help us develop trust in what the state is doing. It actually leads to more mistrust. And so I think whatever you can do, and as quickly as you can, it's very important that we have some way of really developing a cost basis so that we know what each budget area is costing, whether or not it fits within their current budget or not. Within a two-year cycle, we ought to be able to get that rectified. So I think it's important for you to keep that going.
And to that point, I think it would be helpful for us to actually get a copy of the analysis of the agency's true break-even rate. So what you're charging now versus what the true break-even rate would be. And if you could provide that to Mr. Seidel, we'll make sure that's distributed to the members of the committee as well. And with that, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In spite of the fact that Representative Downey always believed in smaller government and so forth, it seems that he created a helped create a monster here. along with Representative Cotton.
Well, and Representative Earhart, not every member probably knows your relationship in that situation with Representative Downey. So.
Yes, but we were all watching, which has nothing to do with us. But I was going to ask if there are any two questions. Do you have any really data that shows that your employees that you at 2100 is not a great deal more than was when this thing was in the shape it was in before, and that the costs are quite good? You don't really have any definitive amounts of employees or costs on the way the system was running at the time you embarked on this enterprise. Now, you have a lot of good suggestions as to why your costs are greater, because your risks are greater now. But do you have anything when you started? Do you know where you started from?
Mr. Boozy.
Madam Chair, committee members, one of the challenges with IT consolidation, clearly, is that moving into this world, IT costs, the staffing costs, the administrative costs were scattered through thousands of budgets and individual accounts across state government. With IT consolidation, we're moving to an environment today where we truly are beginning to know the cost of IT. To address your question specifically, Minute has 21 employees, but that 2,100 employees are staff that have been aggregated from all of the different offices. The cost in the budget that we have today is essentially what we've been pulling together and centralizing out of individual agency budgets. So to the best of my knowledge, the cost for Minute as a whole has not increased the cost of IT for state government as a whole. It's a matter of trying to figure out what that cost really was, pull it under one roof so it can be managed more holistically.
I think, if I remember correctly, in reading different documents, I think the original amount when you guys first started the consolidation process, I think you were around 350 employees. And if I remember that correctly from documents that I've read. So.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The Office of Enterprise Technology's existing staff was between 250 and 300 employees. The staff total, having gone through the mandate to consolidate all state agency IT employees into the agency, has brought that total up to 2,100. But it hasn't been an addition of 1,800 staff to the state payroll as a total. It's been a transfer of employees from one agency or various agencies to Minute.
I have one other question.
And Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your back page, you talk about the 14-15 project portfolio. What are you doing with the DBS phone system, which has been under construction for about 10 years now, and maybe another 10 yet come? What's happening with that?
Mr. Eichten or Mr. Oman?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, Assistant Commissioner for Projects and Initiatives, Jesse Oman, is going to check the portfolio here. It's a portfolio that contains roughly 500 IT projects that are currently ongoing. We'll see if we can get some data for you here right away. But if not, I'm happy to follow up with you, Representative Earhart, and
well, you
give
you
a detailed
info. On your man, I'm sure, so I thought you must have it on the tip of your tongue.
As I said, we have information, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, on all projects in the state's IT portfolio. I just don't know how quickly I can get you the information you're looking for here in the hearing, but happy to follow up after.
Mr. Eichten, it looks like Mr. Oman has an answer for us. And Mr. Oman?
For the record, Jesse Oman with Minute. Thank you for having me here today. Madam Chair, members of the committee, one of the things we enacted as part of the project and portfolio process is to make sure that before we start spending, before we start executing, there is a goal laid out, there is a plan laid out, and there's criteria with our business partners to make sure that we are in agreement on what does success look like, what are we trying to accomplish, what problems are we trying to solve. And that's been one of the shifts that has been important to me coming into this role. I've only been with the state about 2.5 years now, otherwise around 15 years in private industry, was to bring that same level of project oversight and maturity here as well to this new organization. So when you look at, and in particular, I know you asked one project, before we start spending, what I've asked for is some of those baseline project documents are created in conjunction with our business partners to make sure that we have clear agreement on what we're trying to accomplish. While I have a summary here with me today on that particular project, I can always go back and get more details. But as of the last reporting period, which was the end of December, this still was sitting with the business, determining their needs. The spend has not started on the project. We have not started any IT work yet on it until we had agreement of what are we trying to accomplish in that project. And that's one of the things that we really added in this last year, is to make sure it's not just being given over and we start executing without that clear goal and without a path to success.
Representative Earhart, any follow-ups?
Well, Madam Chair, as I remember, they fired their provider that had been with them for, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. This was supposed to be done by now, and so that's why I was wondering what you guys were going to do to bring that thing along so we can get it going again. But you don't know that, so you...
I would say, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would be happy to go back and get the details on it. I can say at this point, at least from a minute perspective and working with our partners, just to reiterate a point that Mr. Eichten had made earlier, I always consider this, yes, projects with an IT component, but overall, holistically, we don't own them. We're working with the business to be able to deliver them. I can see that the IT part has not kicked off or started. I can see that they're still trying to determine those requirements, but I can dig in and get more details on that particular one.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
On this, I think what Representative Earhart is referencing is the DVS, Department of Vehicle Services, their big computer to dealing with their driver's. And not... This is the phone system. I think they're two separate items, and I think Representative Earhart, the way I heard his question, he's asking about the Minlars or whether their big system that has been ongoing and is frustrating that it hasn't come to fruition.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's several projects members have mentioned to me that were concerned about the time frame, and I think that's a common theme here. You saw that with the OLA report. And I would like to have the correspondence that you are clarifying with the Legislative Auditor's Office. It would be helpful for me to have a more concrete timeline of when you expect to have these projects, the special projects, done, in addition to your overall adjustments to the break-even rates for all of the different agencies. And I'd like that plotted out on a calendar system, because I think that will make it more clear for members of what exactly you're trying to achieve. And you said on the first part you had the first rate packages. Okay, so what does that include, and what is the second rate packages, and so forth? I think it would be just helpful for the members to have a better understanding of what you're looking to do and what that means within that time frame. But we also have some other members here that have some questions. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Question for Mr. Eichten, Boozy, or Oman. First, yesterday I had a conversation with Mr. Eichten in my office and wanted to say thank you for making the time to come by, talk through some of the concerns that I've got as someone who is in IT myself. I understand that the consolidation does get a little messy in the beginning phases, but we had some conversations around the consolidation, not just of physical IT, but some of the labor associated with it. And we use as an example of, for example purposes, how many storage administrators are we still carrying, and how many do we actually need? And what I'd really like to get to the bottom of in that regard is, how many duplicative roles do we have in Minute now? Because from the private sector, when we consolidate, we like to look at ways to also shed the cost of labor, because that is a function of adding cost into the delivery of services. So if you would provide to the committee as soon as you're able, help us understand where you are on a projected scale for when you're going to be able to draw down that labor. Second we also talked about what does consolidated IT do for services that we haven't dreamt of or thought of yet, and that was a very profitable conversation. We talked about the renewal of license plates, for example. Very costly enterprise to undertake. There are some technology fixes to these things, and I'd like to hear from you for a minute. What initiatives do you see that you can actually project that could save us significant funds that we maybe aren't talking about? And lastly, I'd asked this earlier of the auditor. We had asked about the role of Minute in MNsure rollout, and I really would like to get to the bottom of that because the technology rollout was not successful. We got lots of hard data on that, and I'd like to begin looking at some of that, if I could, and feel free to answer it in committees and so on, but I really would like to know more about those particular areas that I just articulated to you.
And Mr. Eichten, it would be helpful for the entire committee, too, to see that information, if you could. Do you have a response at all, though?
Mr. Nash, or Representative Nash, Madam Chair, I'm happy to put that information together for you and share it with the rest of the committee. I would just say, in terms of MNsure, we look forward to the auditor's findings as well, and I think it merits further exploration. So.
Okay. Any follow-up, Representative Nash? No.
Madam Chair, I have several pages of questions, and we'll just lay that over for another time. No. I don't want to put my full IT nerd on right now, so we'll do that later.
We'll have to bring them back for sure. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to draw your attention to page 8 of the OLA report. Just for the sake of brevity, I'm just going to mention a couple items because they are concerning to me, and I raised them with Mr. Nobles and Ms. Ferkel, and I'll raise the same point to you because it bears repeating. In the OLA report, it mentions kind of a normal and customary procedure that you have articulated about the use of maximizing federal dollars with refunds after the fact, and that there's a precedent to some extent that you are hanging your hat from. But the OLA report actually goes on to say that they found no federal authorization to support that strategy. Given that, but also your statements to the point of there's no procedure for refunding those agencies that are being overcharged. You're, to use a phrase, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. From a fiduciary's perspective, I find that offensive, that some agencies are paying more than their fair share. You are overstating and overburdening some agencies to placate those agencies that are not understanding or appreciating the true cost of those services that are being provided. So, to my point, we need to have a mature conversation, as I appreciate your articulating here, but it can't happen fast enough. 4 years is not fast enough. You've had time. And so the question that I pose to you is, given that fact in the OLA report, which is very explicit in terms of your responsibilities to the state and the agencies that you provide services to, but pointedly to the federal government, you are refunding them on a biennium basis. Well, what is to say that they might not exact surcharges or penalties on behalf of those programs that are being over-utilized but undercharged? How do you respond to that in terms of the liability that you might expose the state to for the processes that we cannot find precedent for?
Mr. Eichten? Mr. Boosie?
Madam Chair, committee members, I want to start by restating that we do wholeheartedly agree with the audit report, and we're working towards achieving break-even rates. Minute has absolutely no incentive at all to charge rates that are too high for one service and not high enough for another service. So we are moving towards the break-even process. And so that's the stated goal. We are going to be moving towards it more aggressively within the next two rate-setting periods. We'll be immediately putting processes in place But there's absolutely no incentive for Minute as an agency to carry through with this practice, so there is no ill intent. It's more historical than anything else. As far as the liability goes, there has been no conversations about liability with the federal government. This is a practice that's been going on for years where there's a true-up that happens. The federal government looks at our information, and they accept the true-up. So as I mentioned, though, going forward, I think the key point that we wanted to emphasize today is that we do agree with the findings, and we are going to aggressively move towards the break-even rates, and hopefully going forward, this won't be a conversation anymore.
Okay. And Representative Albright, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, then, the report goes on to also talk about your cash flow and the usual and customary of carrying 60 days, which has gone from what they would calculate as $15 million to then $16.7 million to now just recently $27.3 million. As a person responsible for a personal budget and by sitting on this committee, someone that's responsible for the state's budget and the financial wherewithal to pay our bills, it would seem incumbent upon us to ask you, why are you holding more than what is usual and customary for your cash flow needs when it is articulated that you don't need that money? I appreciate the fact that you're talking about you have no financial incentive, but if that's the case, then why such a large, why the largesse of your cash reserve?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I think what the auditor found there in fiscal year 13 was a snapshot of a transition year. And Mr. Boozy has some additional information that shows that since that point, our working capital reserve has been well within the guidelines coming from the federal government. So hand off to Mr. Boozy.
Mr. Boozy?
Madam Chair, committee members, I too was, as a certified public accountant and as a CPA, I was also concerned about that cash flow issue, and I wanted to make sure that this truly was, you know, an issue with the transit with the transition year. So we did take a look at fiscal year 14, 15, and beyond for the budgetary cash flow, and we feel very confident that that the working capital and cash flow going forward for all ensuing years after the audit will be well underneath the federal threshold.
And Representative,
thank you, Madam Chair, and just a final request, and this would actually go to Mr. Nobles and the OLA in terms of if they could provide the correspondence that is referenced in the report. I think that would allow us to have an even more objective and transparent understanding in terms of the dealings and the conversations that have been shared between the various agencies and give us a better perspective in terms of what we're dealing with here. So great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Nobles, if you could provide that to the rest of the committee, that would be helpful as well. Mr. Seidel can make sure that that's distributed to members. You know, this is an issue that's really fresh in our minds because just yesterday in the Ways and Means Committee, we talked about this on a broader level dealing with medical assistance here within the state. And though the federal government seems to be, you know, honoring the true-up at this time, our concern is that can change as the winds at the Capitol in Washington can change too, and we just don't want to find ourselves flat-footed and having to quickly respond with strained resources. So I think that's where some of the members are expressing some concern on that. I have Representative Lane, Carlson, and Johnson next. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions, and one is having to do with the security, because you indicated that you have better security than thin staffs maybe before, and hackers can get into the system, and you're very alert to that. So that you're talking about security. At the same time, the OLA reported that the agencies are saying that they don't have the staff anymore to do the security, but Minute is saying that we're only your service provider, we're not your security source, and maybe I don't understand IT, but I thought most of the security came from IT, so I'm confused about this.
Mr. Eichten.
Madam Chair, Representative Lane, I was surprised, frankly, by those comments, especially particularly the comment that we don't have the ability to assess our environments. Minute, on a daily basis, assesses the environments of state agencies. I think there may be some frankly, semantic confusion between their staff. Our Minute agency-based teams are committed to supporting their business partners. They continuously, in partnership with the centralized security office, work to monitor systems. I don't know if Assistant Commissioner Boozy has further comments, but I was surprised by the lack of clarity in that respect. We are both a service provider, and we are also responsible for ensuring the monitoring and security of agency systems. So,
Mr. Boozy, did you want to comment to that?
Madam Chair, committee members, and I think the way to best synopsize the relationship is Minute is a service provider, but in the security space, our job is to put together a comprehensive information security program that does all of the underpinning things that need to be done today. Those are things such as comprehensive monitoring, access control, assistance with design, building secure applications, and the list goes on. So we are a service provider. We have a comprehensive security program to help get that job done on behalf of our agency customers. But one point that that Ms. Ferkel made, which is absolutely accurate, is at the end of the day, our job as a service provider is to help the business customers truly understand and manage their risk. So at the end of the day, they own the risk for their systems, and the conversation that we have to have with them is helping them understand what is the risk, what's being done today, what is any residual risk that exists because of some of the decisions that they have made as the actual owner of the data. So, for example, if we have systems today where the agency has made a decision that they don't want to invest in testable disaster recovery strategies, our job is to make it crystal clear to those commissioners and the deputy commissioners that it's a cost decision that you're making. If the system happens to have some major issue, you may not be able to recover your system within an acceptable recovery strategy, recovery point for the customers that you serve. So that's how the relationship works. We're the provider. We have to educate them on risk, but at the end of the day, they own and have to accept that risk.
And Representative Lane.
For instance, at the Health and Human Services, the data that they need to keep secure, that needs to be kept secure about the people that are served there, you keep that secure. You, as the service provider, are responsible for the security of that data.
Mr. Boozy.
Madam Chair, committee members, to some extent that is correct. We provide the security framework, we provide the tools to get the job done, and we provide those services as part of our security program. So we provide the framework to make it happen, but many of the decisions that impact security are actually made by the business themselves. So, for example, if they make decisions that they want to use our access control solutions to provide access to every single employee in the agency because that's what they want to do, that impacts their security posture. So we provide the tools, the framework, we help them with risk decisions, but they are an active partner in those conversations, and ultimately they do own the risk.
But Mr. Boozy, how often does that happen where they don't follow the recommended security protocol from your agency?
Madam Chair, committee members, we're trying now as part of our overall IT consolidation to get a better handle on those situations. Being a new agency, we're at a point in time where we're starting to have more and more of these conversations. In the past, they may have happened in individual silos, have not been properly documented. But today, as we put the enterprise security program together, one of the security areas that we're working on diligently is called our governance, risk, and compliance program, where those types of decisions, exceptions to policy, standards, and best practice are in fact documented. Generally, they will be granted based on an authority of a deputy commissioner or higher within that agency, and they will be revisited on a periodic basis. But that's the direction we're going.
And Mr. Boozy, how do you communicate that to the legislature, who, you know, is the first line of communication when a security breach happens? I mean, what kind of communication do you do to us as the legislative body and also to the governor's office to highlight this is a potential security risk for the state?
Madam Chair, committee members, at this point in time, there are no provisions where we have provided any of the legislative bodies with ongoing risk information about specific decisions that are happening within government agencies and within within particular computer systems. Those are conversations that are happening between MNIT as a provider and the leadership of the agencies, which ultimately own the risk.
And Mr. Boosie, what is your time frame in your, I would call it an audit or risk assessment for all of the different agencies when it comes to data breaches? You know, and do you prioritize it based upon sensitivity of the data? And what is your timeline in getting that completed? As you've said that this is something that you're just launching, what's your timeline in getting that completed and having that available to the legislature and the governor's office?
Madam Chair, committee members, my answer may be a little different than your question, but for IT security for our state as a whole, as part of our tactical plan, we have a comprehensive IT security consolidation plan, and it's a plan that is looking at security with both horizontal and vertical lenses. On the horizontal front, we're trying to put in place services that can be built once and leveraged on behalf of all of the customers that we serve. Those are things such as comprehensive monitoring, ongoing continuous vulnerability management of systems, those kind of services. We also have other services as well that we are trying to stand up that need boots on the ground presence within our agencies, and that consolidation we're doing on a vertical basis. The model that we're moving towards is that we have boots on the ground teams that actually serve entire groups of agencies rather than trying to do this agency by agency by agency. So this is a model that we're now putting in place in order to deliver better security services and deliver them more cost effectively. Now, application risk assessments will be one of those services that we will be providing on an ongoing basis. The theory behind it is that we can look at all applications, particularly the most critical ones that deal with not public data, on an ongoing basis and do continuous application assessments. As a government, we're not there yet. We're still putting the infrastructure in place. However, one thing that we did this year is we did an enterprise-wide high-level assessment of all government agencies within the executive branch as part of the federal government's National Cybersecurity Review. We were one of the only states that actually did the high-level assessment of all of our agencies to kind of get some baseline scoring in place. And that was done as part of legislation that was passed last year requiring annual assessments of agencies. A little bit different answer than you were going for, but I felt it was important to give you the context of how this was unfolding.
And that is helpful, but I guess I am concerned about, you know, data breaches are not just limited to the private sector. We are a target. We've seen problems within our state, and I guess I would look for a more concrete a timeline of how you're going to address that and having it more focused on the most sensitive data that we hold. I think we owe that to the citizens. So I think we'll have more of a conversation on that in follow-up.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash, to that point.
Madam Chair, Assistant Commissioner Boosie, did I hear you say correctly that from a GRC or Governance, Risk, and Compliance that some departments actually have the ability to not subscribe to what you're suggesting? I believe I did hear that, and I just wanted to make sure that that was correct, because if so, that frightens me.
Mr. Boosie.
Madam Chair, committee members, in general, the scope of jurisdiction for MNIT services extends to the executive branch of state government. There have been individual agencies within the executive branch that are exempted from MNIT's statutory authority. Representative Kahn referred, you know, to some examples earlier. We have a lot of work to do. We're certainly working with everybody that wants to work with us today, including partners at the county and local government level. But Representative Nash, committee members, that is correct.
Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, I would just make a suggestion from a professional perspective that we look at finding a way to, as policy, at least roll security up into one of the core services that we provide to all state agencies, because that, I mean, from Commissioner Boosie, from your professional perspective, would that not be prudent policy?
Mr. Boosie?
Madam Chair, committee members, with the importance that everybody knows is needs to be placed in information security today, the more we work together, the more we collaborate, the more we share, the better off we're going to be as a state government, and that's in fact one of the reasons why I'm a fan of the bipartisan legislation that was passed by the legislature several years ago.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Boosie. We have Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, several steps back, my questions were covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Carlson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question on contracting out your IT services. Has the consolidation of IT services under Minute affected the trends for contracting out for IT professional technical service by Minute compared to statewide contracting for IT professional technical services, each handled its own IT system? I think the expectation was that the centralized IT approach would result in less contracting out. I'm wondering if that has been the case.
Mr. Acton?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't think I can give you a straight answer at this moment on whether there's been more professional technical contracting or less, especially as a result of consolidation. The legislature has invested in projects in various state agencies, some very big projects that have associated with them significant professional technical contract spend. So, you know, to point to the impact of consolidation on that overall breakdown between in-house and professional technical, I don't know that I could speak to that at this time.
John, can take it.
Representative John?
I think Assistant Commissioner Boosie may have more to add, though.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe you could get that information to me later rather than right now. That'd be fine.
Okay. We have a couple more members, okay, if we could. And we're running short here on time. I've got Representative Pugh, Kahn, Nelson, Schultz, and Petersburg, and Lane. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two brief questions, I believe, hopeful, for Mr. Eichten. I believe on page 3 of our handout, the slide entitled Agency Funding, I believe I heard you say that agencies did not have the wherewithal to opt out. However, we've since heard that an exemption was granted to the IRRRB, and there are other exemptions, MNsure. I'm wondering if there are any other exemptions that we might want to be aware of. Thank you.
Mr. Eichten.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh. To clarify, state agencies that are under the umbrella and authority based on the legislation of IT consolidation are not able to opt out. But those that are exempted, you know, it's sort of a moot point. They're opted out by law. In addition to IRRRB, those agencies would include Minnesota State Retirement System, the PARA, TRA, the State Lottery, Campaign Finance Board. Believe that's near comprehensive, but I'd have to check to make sure I'm not missing.
Mr. Acton, we've got a phone a friend here. Mr. Shepard has the language in front of him if he wants to share that for Representative Pugh's sake.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, the list that that Mr. Eichten referred to is almost complete. He's got the three statewide pension funds plus the State Board of Investment, the Campaign Finance, State Lottery, and the State Radio Board, which isn't generally considered a state agency anyway.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that does answer my question, and I'm just very concerned about that, so I'll just leave that be for now. My second question goes back to page 2 of our handout, the slide entitled Minute Services, Who We Are, and I believe I heard you state that you service cities, other government entities, and I'm wondering if you could just quickly share with us the largest cities that you service and possibly largest school districts or educational entities, assuming that is potentially school districts.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Eichten.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, we offer network service to, I believe it's roughly about a third of school districts, but it's on a voluntary basis. We have no authority to require them to use the state network, but I believe it's about a third choose to do that. All cities and counties operate on state networks, so in terms of the largest city, it would be the city of Minneapolis. And then in addition to network service, there's some hosting services that are provided. Email we do provide to the city of St. Paul, and then Mr. Boozy's cybersecurity team also provides services. Again, it's not mandated. There's no statutory authority to require that cities and counties use those services, but he does. Well, I'll let him actually offer information in that respect.
But Mr. Busey, too, I'm just curious, so have you overcharged the city of St. Paul then for these, or these other entities too, as part of the process?
Madam Chair, committee members, in the past, our enterprise security program had some general funding to provide these kind of services to local units of government. During the last legislative session, we did retain some of our general funding. We have the capability with general funds today where we pay for two individuals that are highly skilled forensic investigators that help with security incidents and incident response. So every day we have a process in place through what's called the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Sector. That's what are referred to as one of the sector-based ISECs, where we get a feed of information from the federal government and we share information with the federal government as well. But every day we get threat feeds and alert information about potential incidents that are happening within Minute itself, within state government, and within our local partners. So what these two individuals do is they help local units of government primarily that are having problems with malware that are within their environments, with potential breaches. And these generally fund individuals operate as a benefit to the entire state of Minnesota, spending quite a bit of time with school districts and police departments and everybody else who potentially has a security incident, and we help those individuals out.
And Mr. Boosey, are we providing that service then to those entities without the charge?
Madam Chair, committee members, there is no fee for that service because they are paid for by you through the general fund appropriation that we get. It's, I believe, about $400,000 a year, possibly a little bit smaller than that.
And Mr. Boosey or Mr. Eichten, do you have a list of those who have accessed those services? And if you could provide that, I think that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, committee members, we certainly could give you a synopsis of all the individuals. That's a big list,
okay,
if you want that.
That's fine.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Representative Pugh?
Thank you.
Sorry. I interrupted your questioning. Sorry. Well,
that was the line of questioning that I was going to be pursuing. So thank you very much, and I'm done.
Okay. Sorry. I have a bunch of people on the list that have already asked questions, but I also have Representative Schultz, who has not had a chance, and I just want to make sure she gets a chance to ask her question before we end here quickly.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So. Mr. Boosey, how do you calculate, in general, the costs of the services? And are they competitive? Do you look at what's available on the open market?
Mr. Boosey?
Madam Chair, committee members, for all of the services that Minute provides, there is a constant market comparison between the cost of our service and the cost of what that service would be on the open market. One of the things that we look at as an agency is we need to provide these services to the customers. How best can we provide them, either running the service internally or potentially partnering with the private sector to provide those services? So we're constantly in a state of evaluating how do we deliver our services most cost effectively, whether done internally or through channel partners that we use.
Okay, Representative Schultz.
Thank you. So you don't use the historical charges from the departments, from the agencies. Did you scrap that and just look at costs based on these inputs that you calculate?
Mr. Boosey.
Madam Chair, committee members, the actual costs of the services are generally calculated based on the components, the ingredients that are made, that are put together to deliver those services. That's generally how this is done, but we also are comparing our cost model to market, and really that's an attempt to determine, are there ways that we can use other sourcing type arrangements to deliver the services more effectively? So for example, you know, with email and messaging, the question that we had on the table is, can we deliver cost-effective secure services for messaging on our own better than we could do if we had Microsoft be one of our channel partners like they are today? And in that particular case, we chose to work with the channel partner to help deliver those services.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Members, we are at our time frame. I'm going to let Representative Kahn have the last word since this is her baby, basically. but we will be meeting again tomorrow. I think Minute and the OLA office have a couple of asks from us, and hopefully you can get that to us within a short time frame so that members still have this conversation fresh in their mind, and we'll have to see from there how much further we take this too. So, Representative Kahn, with that?
Yes. Well, Madam Chairman, listening to Representative Nash, I'm really glad we have a real technology nerd on board instead of someone who's just faking it.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Members, with that, we are adjourned.